Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. This week, at the Smithers Courthouse, the Supreme Court of British Columbia convened to deliberate the case of Coastal GasLink Pipeline versus Chief Sahail, also known as Adam Gagnon, on the alleged grounds that Chief Sahail tampered with heavy equipment and blocked access to roads leading to a CGL pipeline job site on Wet'suwet'en territory in October of 2021. The Crown prosecution requested a sentence of jail time due to Chief Sahail's leadership role in the community, which, along with a lack of a guilty plea, according to the showed a strong instance of the case of distress and deterrence, even though he's a 68-year-old first-time offender and since the breach of the court order has not been a repeat offender. The principles of GLADU were enacted in this case, which is a sentencing principle that recognizes that Indigenous peoples face racism and systemic discrimination in and out of the criminal law system, and it attempts to deal with the crisis of overrepresentation and inequities of Aboriginal peoples in custody. GLADU instructs judges when sentencing or setting bail to consider, quote, all available sanctions other than imprisonment that are reasonable in the circumstances, with particular attention to the circumstances of Aboriginal offenders. The sentencing took place after 2 days in court presided over by Justice Michael Tamman. During the hearing, the Crown prosecution cited sentencing precedents from injunction breach cases in Canada, which had resulted in a sentence of jail time of up to 90 days. After 2 days, however, the sentence was ordered. On July 3rd, Chief Sahail was ordered to serve 60 days in community with no community service.
At first, I was quite scared because for a second there, it kind of sounded like there could have been some jail time. But then sitting there and listening to him saying that he would be on house arrest was very thankful. I mean, for him to be criminally charged and for looking after our own land, territory, our own Yinta, like that baffles me, and I think it's wrong. And Adam's my hero, you know. I love him so much, and Chief Sahail, you know, he's definitely a hero in my eyes. I hope that it does set good precedents on future cases that are coming up, and I am pleased to say that I was very happy to hear the judge himself say unceded territory. So that's going to go on record. That's going to be there forever, him saying unceded territory. So it's a small win for us, but it's a big win.
How do you feel about the sentencing that we just heard from Judge Tamman?
I feel relieved that Chief Sahail is not going to spend any time in a correctional facility. I think that that was the right choice. It was relieving to hear that the land dispute was a factor in sentencing. It's frustrating that we've had to spend so much time in court and in trial, and the fact that he still had a guilty conviction. So, I feel a bit conflicted. I'm relieved that it's over and that he's not going to jail. He should never have to go to jail for upholding Wet'suwet'en law. And frustrated at the fact that we're here in the first place.
Hey, my name is Janet Williams. I'm known as Auntie Janet throughout the world. I'm here to support Sahail, my father clan. This morning the defense was talking about what he's been doing on our territory and that he hasn't have any records on him or anything like that. He's been doing an awful lot for the territory. The defense lawyer spoke on that all morning. And by the way it sounds, by 2 o'clock they're going to have the judge do the sentencing. But I'm hoping for house arrest which I heard they were speaking about. So let's just hope that goes that way, because he's an elder himself, you know, and he's got issues, medical issues, so he can't be spending time in jail at all. So yeah, I'm here to support him, and there's many of us here that's supporting him from quite a distance. So I'm really hoping that it works well in his favor.
Can you tell me a little bit who Chief Sahail is to you and who he is to the community as well?
He has a big name, Chief Sahail. He's had that for years. He's one of the chiefs for the Lekwungen Siouxsiou clan, one of the four high chiefs. And how he's my father clan is because my dad was from that clan. So that's how we are related. And yeah.
Okay. Okay, so how do you feel?
Well, I'm really confident there that, the Tamans predicted there that it was going to go into appeal very early in trial. And basically the whole stage was set for that. And our lawyers are going to be filing the appeal within the next day or two. And I'm really confident there, like this is going to probably end up going all the way to possibly the Supreme Court of Canada even, you know, because it's basically an extension of Delgamuukw, you know, which we kind of been waiting for a long time to get clarification there on our laws, you know, on our lands, you know, and so I think it's really important. I'm really pleased with how, you know, everything turned out. Even though, we didn't win the original, but I think in the long run, it's going to be even more positive.
Hearing Judge Tamman use the term unceded territory, unceded land, how did that feel to hear that being echoed back to you?
That is something there that a year ago you would never have heard by any court, you know, because he was kind of reluctant to use some of the terms of that nature right at the beginning. And he was he corrected counsel when they were using, you know, the colonial law. And then within 3 days, he was making reference to colonial law, you know, so, you know, he wanted it to be all Canadian law, you know, like unilaterally. But she said, no, it's colonial law because it's colonial influence and colonial, you know, so my lawyer was really, really clear about that. You know, so.
Yeah. On the appeal, have your lawyers told you anything about how that works in terms of you serving the sentence that was just handed down here right now?
Unfortunately, they said if it was a jail sentence, it would be more serious. But because of it's being a community sentence there, they said that, I will never get that back.
You know, but so you start serving that sentence regardless of happens with the appeal?
That's right.
That's interesting that you would serve a sentence that could be turned back again.
No, that's right. Well, that's a good question for me to ask my lawyer.
It's been almost 3 years, you know, that we've been going through this fight just with just the court stuff alone. And within that 3 years, the pipeline got finished. You know, so they did their job. The Crown did a good job with CGL there, making sure that we were off the land there for that period of time. But it's important there to realize there that it's not over yet, because this is just beginning, because it's going to be registered with the appeal court. And once we go into appeal, then that's going to be another long, drawn-out process that's going to take, could be years. We don't know. But anyway, other than that, I just thank all of you for all of your support. And being here today, you know, it means a lot to me. It's very warming to the heart. And all the letters of support that came in from people all over BC, you know, that was really touching as well. So there's nothing more I could say other than I love all of you so much there, to, just for being here and being so supportive over the last few years. And, you know, Molly and her crew there were just stepping in and taking care of me, looking after everything that, all the legal costs and all the, you know, the everything that was entailed there to get bring it this far. So it's really, really important to me there that the fight go on. And I think that all of everybody here that is here feels exactly the same way, that it's not over. Thank you so much.
Adam.
Love you, Adam.
Next time. Adam.
There are 60 days to stay in bed and take a rest.
Yeah.
Only leave the house when you're going to go see medical. Theo.
Yep. I was just saying that I have to maybe get the Disney subscription too. I exhausted Netflix. And thank Rebecca here. Like Rebecca just sort of. Yeah.
Well done.
Yes, yes, yes. She just thrashed, you know, the Crown's witnesses, every one of them. You know, she just basically sucked them in and then just tore their complete defense down. You know, she was amazing. You know, like, and I kept telling her, I says, it seems like every time you're running out of bullets, all of a sudden you're locked and loaded again. And, yeah, she was just so inspirational there. Yeah. Like, I just felt so, so pleased just having her by my side and watching her work, you know, and just how consistent she was and just sharp as a
knife. It's my
honor and my pleasure to defend Adam and defend Chief Sahail. Today, I'm speaking with a Prince George City Councillor, Trudy Clausen, about small nuclear reactors or small modular reactors. Council Clausen proposed to include SMRs as power generators in northern BC at this year's North Coast Local Government Association Conference, or NCLGA. The topic of discussion was power in BC, and representatives from remote towns between Prince George and the Alberta border had complained that BC Hydro's Site C Dam was not a solution to their power limitations for towns and villages such as Valmont and McBride. It is not uncommon for these towns to experience lengthy brownouts, which are outages caused by excessive electricity demand, severe weather events, or a malfunction on an electricity monitoring system. However, the province of BC has had a moratorium on nuclear power and uranium mining since 2010. So why is Councillor Clausen trying? Listen to my interview with Prince George Councillor Trudy Clausen to find out.
Good morning. I am Trudy Clausen. I am a city councillor in the city of Prince George, and I was elected in 2022.
We're here today to speak about small nuclear reactors as energy conductors for the North. Can you tell me what area of BC you would like to see these small nuclear reactors in? And when we say small nuclear reactors, can you give me a little bit of a basis of what you proposed at that NCLGA?
There are places in our province where we've actually have brownouts. I was shocked to hear how many brownouts that the community of Valmont has. And just thinking about all the things that we are looking at, in especially with Clean BC, I just thought, okay, we have to begin to look at all the available options, because it's not acceptable for a community, this especially the size of Valmont, to be experiencing brownouts. Like, we think we're a developed nation. Like, we need to solve this problem. So that's where I was coming at. I'm not an expert, but small modular reactors are, they're still under development. I think there's one in operation, but in order for them to be more cost effective, they actually have to find a design that they can easily reproduce, because that will also help to bring down the cost. And then there's also the micro reactors, which produce 20 megawatts. So the small modular reactors are looking, like, I've seen numbers anywhere from 300 to 450, which actually are enough to power a city of 300,000 people, but the small modular reactors are, or the micro nuclear reactors, which haven't been developed yet, but they would produce around 20 megawatts. For a piece of industry, I think they would, they're saying that they would power around like a village or a town of 3,000 people. And my whole thing is here, we have to solve these problems, because for Vail Mount, they are on, this question came up in discussions with BC Hydro, and BC Hydro, for whatever reason, has not been able to solve the problem for Vail Mount. And if nuclear energy would help solve that problem, because look, all of Canada, we're sparsely populated, and perhaps rather than building hundreds of miles of transmission lines, it might be better to look at how can we produce energy exactly where it's needed.
You've answered my next question, which I guess is what you think the gaps that small nuclear reactors that they would fill in our current BC Hydro plan, including the new site C Dam.
Yes. Anytime you're talking nuclear energy, you're talking about a lot of energy. The energy density is incredible. And so they, like, that's their benefit, right? And even though they're expensive, like historically, it's been an expensive form of power. What we're looking at here in BC is Site C is coming online, I think it's next year, and it's going to be producing about 1,000 megawatts. The provincial government has designated Prince George as the hydrogen hub. Now, the proposed Fortescue hydrogen plant that is being proposed for Prince George would consume the entire power production of Site C. So that means we would have no additional power. And that's not even talking about the LNG project that's being proposed for either it's Kitimat or Prince Rupert. And we're currently in a position where we're actually buying power during low production times as we are. And in order for our economy to thrive, in order for people to be able to build and develop businesses, and especially for the outlying areas like Vail Mount, they need reliable energy. And so it's our job to look at solutions. I'm perhaps one of those, and maybe I'm rare, but I really believe that a city like Prince George, that is a hub city, relies on the wealth of the surrounding communities, because I don't want us just to suck up the wealth. I really believe that as our outlying areas prosper, our city will prosper.
Absolutely. I do know as well, because I was also at the North Coast Local Government Association conference this year, that representatives from Vail Mount said that they had experienced up to almost 4 days in the winter without power or experiencing these brownouts. And we all know how cold it gets up here in the north. And that really is something that BC Hydro could not, in the moment, to the representatives from Vail Mount, they could not speak to a better solution for that.
Yeah, and that's why I think we have to look at other options. If BC Hydro cannot address that, then perhaps maybe that is a model that has, you know, certainly, I would say, I think anybody would admit that has failed for Vail Mount. So that's why I suggested, then let's look at that. We shouldn't preclude any form of energy from a conversation, especially one that has the safety record of nuclear energy. The response to nuclear energy is always, oh my goodness, scary. France has been using nuclear energy for decades. Canada is a world leader in producing nuclear reactors that have never had an issue. So it's one of these public perception thing, and it's safety, and the perception of safety is a little bit weird. We're much more nervous about getting on an airplane than we are about getting in our car. And yet more people get killed in a car than they do in an airplane. So it's one of these odd things that, you know, that our brain or our emotions, whatever, we don't process risk properly or logically. So I think nuclear energy is one of those things. And that's why I think it should be on the table as part of the discussion.
I know that Ontario and Quebec have really adopted the use of nuclear energy to power their remote communities as well. But I just want to pivot to some of the concerns about nuclear power. So one of them is in a review by the Environmental Working Group that does criticize small nuclear reactor technology, argues that it will not be cost effective due to the need to build thousands of such high priced reactors to achieve factory based cost reductions, which you mentioned as well, the lack of one standardized design. So SMRs currently have dozens of designs, and without it being standardized, it really makes cost savings harder. So what do you say to the argument of
cost of this power source?
Anytime you're developing a new technology or a new version like the small modular reactors, you're going to, it is correct that the market is producing and the research is producing all kinds of different styles and designs, and that's to be expected. And what I'm thinking, what normally happens in those circumstances is you try all the market, the industry tries all kinds of designs, finally settles on one that works, and that's the one that will be mass produced. And that's how the costs will eventually come down, because it's still, that idea of the small modular reactors is still very new. And so it will just take a bit of time.
Okay. Now, a single 300 megawatt reactor, which I think is, I'm not sure, I mean, we touched on this, but is that roughly the size that you're looking, that you were thinking would work for the North and a town maybe the size of Valemount or an area to power?
If Valemount had 300 megawatts, that would, like I said earlier, it would actually be enough to power 300,000 homes. Yes. So then there is the micro reactor, and that is something that is that's even a little bit further away in terms of research. Right. But these are things that really need to be on the table. If we want, if society, if we collectively still want to achieve net zero, we have to consider this, because I do not want to see our landscape completely cluttered up and our farmland completely covered with solar and wind power energy production facilities, because we don't want that either. So we have to consider other ways of achieving those goals if that's what we want to continue doing.
So I'm looking at the use of water to create that steam, and as well as the air cooling that's required to run these reactors. So water is such a precious resource that we have here in the North, and it's also something that constantly needs to be preserved and protected. So looking at the amount of water that's used to run a reactor, what do you think still that small modular reactors are a viable use of water? And if so, can the areas in most need of the reliable power support the resource use?
That's a very good question, and probably I'm not quite qualified to answer all of it, but what I would say is that no matter what we choose, we're going to have an environmental impact. The Site C Dam and the original Bennett Dam certainly used an incredible amount of water and created an incredible amount of environmental change, and yet that has driven our economy in BC for decades now. And so as we look at shifting how we produce electricity, we have to think about everything together and look at the energy density that is created, and for each gallon of water, how much energy is produced by nuclear energy. So these are the questions that have to be asked. But anytime that you're looking at trying to solve problems, you have to look at the whole thing, and you have to be honest, and you have to be willing to have a real conversation based on facts and not on ideological ideas, because ideas are great and they can often spur discussion, but you have to be willing to hear the pros and cons of everything. And so that's why I think that we have to include nuclear energy as a possible option to help solve the problems and not exclude it just simply because it's new and we haven't done it and we currently have a moratorium on it.
Okay. Now, Councillor Claussen, I did want to just touch back again on something that you mentioned about wind and solar. What is it, do you think, that is lacking by wind and solar energy, and why you think the province maybe shouldn't invest in just more infrastructure for wind and solar generated power?
I think they have both have their place. But what I have seen in my travels around small parts of the world is farmland covered with solar panels. And it's, no, this is not what we want. We have to be careful about that for solar panels and for wind farms, because there's issues there as well. So while they have their place, we need to consider the whole impact on the environment and compare the amount of energy generated by those and consider whether or not that's something that we want to really heavily pursue as the sort of the only few options. Because especially one of the common issue with wind and solar is the amount of time each day that they're producing energy. And because they're not producing energy 24/7, you have to have batteries, and all of that is also, it's such a big, either you have to have batteries to store the energy they produce during their production time, or you have to have something else to fill in the energy needs during the time that they're offline. So these are all things that need to be really strongly considered, because you can't, if we want to have a society like ours that is energy heavy, energy usage heavy, you have to find ways to fuel that. And that's why I think we have to consider nuclear as one of the options.
Okay. My last question was just if where you see small modular reactors factoring into the provincial goal of investing in clean energy sources.
I think that they are essential because we simply are not producing enough. Like I said in my example about Site C Dam coming on, it's going to produce a massive 1,000 megawatts of electricity. But on the other hand, one project will suck up the entire usage there. We have to look at increasing the energy production we have because everything that we do needs energy. And because I'm very concerned with Clean BC's a goal of being, I think it's net zero by 2030 or 2035. Mm-hmm. And that projection and in the government's own modeling, they're looking, the impact of reaching net zero with the current technology that we have by 2030 would mean that our economy would be reduced. The amount of money in our economy in BC would be reduced by $28 billion, which is a financial hit to each individual in BC of $4,600 a year. And I'm not sure that any one of us is willing to do that. So we have to, and I really think that goal is going to have to be adjusted to reflect reality. And because I know that anything nuclear is going to take quite some years because currently, like I said, we have a moratorium against its use in BC, but I expect that the Clean BC goal and like the deadline for net zero will have to be adjusted to reflect reality.
What's next for you as a counselor?
I really think that going forward, we have to look realistically at our energy requirements and find solutions that can actually meet those energy requirements, unless we seriously want to reduce our energy dependency. And so I think that is a choice that British Columbians will have to make. And I think in the end, we'll probably come up with the right solution. But in the meantime, we have work to do and we have questions to ask and research to do, and solutions have to be based on reality.
Councillor Clausen, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with CSCK News today.
Thank you so much, Pamela. I really appreciated being asked, and thank you very much, and hello to all your listeners.
You've been listening to CSCK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at csknews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CSCK News. CSCK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.